it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 371. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the latest on what has been going around as far as the 2020 season is concerned, when it might start, what it might look like if and when it starts, and hopefully not throwing some cold water on whether or not we have a season in the first place, but just some things to think about as we hope and pray and wait for a 2020 season here at some point in the next few months. The Phillies did something cool on their Twitter feed. They ran down a little bit of a tournament on what they felt was the best non-clinching moment of the last 20 years, and so we're going to talk about that and see if you guys agree with what the final two plays that they were debating over, and whether or not any of the other plays in their tournament deserve to be in the final two or the winner. And then we'll get to a couple other fun things, maybe non-sports related, towards the end of the podcast here as well. Joining me, as they do every Sunday night, is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. You, of course, know Justin from Baseball Prospectus. You know him from The Dirty Inning with Trevor Strunk and all the other stuff that he does with Liz Rocher, Continued Success, all the Patreon stuff that they do. Absolutely hammered with Chris Jones on the Patreon. Lots of stuff with Justin. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. How you doing, buddy?
Woo! Feeling great. High energy. Yeah, just been running around circles in my living space for 3-4 hours now. Just
like a tiny dog, yeah.
Just getting that energy ready for tonight's episode, definitely. Yeah. So it's things are going really pretty typical over here.
You know, when that happens, you need to get a rawhide, and you just sit down and you chew on that for a good half hour, and you'll be set.
Yeah, I think I just need one of those giant ball, like inflatable balls that I can just roll around the neighborhood.
Yes.
In. Yeah.
Yes.
What you really need is to turn into an inflatable noodle man for a while and just let the motor run, so you could just be flopping around for hours, and by the time that's done,
just get me on the dance floor at a wedding, and I turn into one of those. No problem.
And the voice you heard there is from Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, one half of Continued Success, and she is a vital member of the Patreon as well. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
Hanging in there in the time of coronavirus. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
As we continue to try and navigate our way through a baseball-less and Phillies-less baseball season here in 2020. And I guess we'll start off with the latest news or the latest rumors that have been going around as far as what Major League Baseball is planning here for 2020. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic reported over the weekend that baseball is considering playing in empty spring training parks to start off the season, with no fans in the stands and with the players themselves being quarantined. He admits that the logistics of such a plan would be extremely complex and perhaps even insurmountable, but this is kind of where Major League Baseball's head is at right now. And that dovetails with a conference call that the president had with every major sports organization's head over the weekend, where he said he was hoping to have fans back in the stands in August or September. So even if that rosy scenario comes to pass, and I think right now most people feel like that is the rosy scenario, that's way later than the July 1st start date to the Major League season that it sounded like Major League Baseball was kicking around. And so in that case, that makes sense what baseball, according to Ken Rosenthal, is considering: playing in empty spring training parks with no fans and with the players themselves being quarantined. You know, there are some other items to get into as far as that concern, but let's start off right there. And Liz, let me start with you. What do you make on what Major League Baseball is considering right now? How realistic do you think any of these plans that they're coming up with or considering are at the moment?
I really don't think any of them are actually realistic, because think about how many people you need to run a baseball game. To run a baseball game that's going to be televised without fans, you still need training staff, you still need park staff, you need grounds people, you need trainers, you need a lot of people. It's a lot of people involved, and that, you know, there's camera people, there are announcers. I have no idea what they're going to do for entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on-field interviews. It'll be really bleak looking if they even manage to get that far. Like, it's that there's so much and so much uncertainty. There would need to be widespread availability of tests because they'd need to test people in some way. And, you know, I want to say that it's in no way essential, but it feels like the president might be willing to grant them some kind of exception,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
It just seems like a rosy scenario is that's like a ridiculous thing. Like, this is a fairy tale. I really don't think it's a realistic scenario at all, but maybe we'll find out that that's different. I would love for it to be a possibility, but I can't wrap my brain around it.
Yeah, and Justin, I guess, I mean, it would be so different the way the season would start, and we would all take it, I'm sure. You know, we would take baseball starting the season in spring training parks with the Phillies down in Clearwater and playing their games in front of an empty spring training facility with no fans and the players themselves being quarantined. I think that is just as tricky as anything else, but Liz is right. I mean, if you want to broadcast these games, I imagine some of it can be done from people's homes. It's amazing what cable news networks are doing. Virtually everything is being done from people's homes, and yet they're still putting a product on television. So technically speaking, I'm sure it probably can be done, but just, you know, trying to get people in the stands in August or September, California Governor Gavin Newsom basically said he doesn't see that happening in his state. And there are a few teams that play in California. So that would throw a monkey wrench into things if individual state governors said, yeah, no, probably still not going to happen here. I also read a piece in the Washington Post on Sunday morning talking about, there were a number of experts who essentially said they have absolutely no way of knowing when we'll be able to start sports again. But I guess if you're Major League Baseball, Justin, you kind of have to plan for different contingencies, and it's not very realistic as far as I'm concerned either, but I guess they got to start somewhere.
People are ready to make money again, John. You know, this has
Is
been
that right?
a fun,
yeah.
fun little pandemic, but the people who make the most money from big public events like this are ready to see that cash flow moving again. So I think at the end of the day, the word that comes to mind hearing reports like this is just kind of useless. I mean, it's only been a couple of weeks since the initial plan was, all right, first things first, we're not having a baseball game until the rulings on mass gatherings are back to what they were. And I guess that just got thrown out to the idea of, oh, no, we'll start the season at spring training facilities in front of no one, which is the exact opposite of what we had heard initially. So that is kind of where I land on my conclusion of, well, I guess they're just sick of this not being, the money coming in that would have been coming in by now if a Major League Baseball season had started. So, yeah, it's like you said, obviously, if they do this, we all tune in and we're probably pretty excited to do so. But, you know, staging the baseball season around whether or not you can get a bunch of people in the same place at the same time seemed like a pretty good rule number one to start with, because that's kind of the problem. That's
right.
That's the entire problem right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know what numbers the president's looking at. If I had to,
he's not looking at anything.
If I had to go by instinct, I would say that it was just something to say, that it was something to say that, oh yeah, we're looking, we can maybe get a season started by August. I mean, this is a start date that has been pushed back theoretically several times, but that's all it's really seems like it's been thus far, is just a theory. We have learned from the get-go that this is something that can't really be controlled, and you certainly can't, well, it can be, not the virus itself can't be controlled, your reaction to it can, and the planning for the future is kind of just off the table. The approach to this has to be what's going on today, what's happening in front of us now, and baseball needs to react to how the overall state of the handling of the health crisis is going on a day-to-day basis, and then plan from there. But it's not really helping anybody to just jump on a call and tell every commissioner of every sport Except I think NCAA wasn't present on that call
right,
for some reason.
Right.
But every
it's professional sports league, so yeah, that's the big. But I mean, they probably should have been in on the call because you know that's a huge sporting league.
Sure,
you know, it's a big moneymaker too. Sure, yeah.
These are different. Like the situation remains the same for everyone, but at the same time, these all involve countless numbers of people who are coming and going everywhere. People have it and don't know it. And we're talking about leagues and facilities and fans and gatherings and whatever that like increases the risk factor here exponentially. And we're talking to the commissioners of all these different leagues where you don't know what the hell's going on or any details about anything on the ground. And you're telling them, oh, well, you know, we can get this started by August. Like it's rosy is a nice way to put it. It's just kind of useless is what's where I land on that. Like it's until we start seeing the health factor of this, like
right,
turn around
right.
until we start seeing all the things we hear about every day, curves getting flattened, numbers going down, new cases not cropping up, people getting tested. You really can't even, you can't think about having a Major League Baseball game, whether you want to have it in front of a crowd or not. Like, it's going to involve people getting together, and that's exactly what can't happen right now. So I think
right.
the initial idea of not having a Major League Baseball game until you're cleared to have mass gatherings again is probably the way to go. I don't know why
yeah.
you deviate from that now other than to give people maybe something to look forward to or throw a bone to people who are just ready to start making money.
Yeah, I mean,
a good two, oh, I'm sorry, I just say a good 2 to 3 of the, 10 people on that call aren't total idiots. Like, you imagine Roger, Goodell just sort of nodding, in anticipation of every word the president says. You imagine, NBA, MLB, they're not morons. They know that the purpose of this call was to try and tempt them into starting their leagues back and putting a firm date on it. It's the point, because after the call, the president said they can't keep up, they weren't meant to be closed down. They got to get back going. Like, at some point, I've been wondering, they're going to be at loggerheads, because the sports leagues will not, as much as they want to start, they don't want to put people at risk because they will get sued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fox News is being sued for disinformation. Putting people at risk needlessly is off the table, and they all know that.
Yeah.
So,
and I think this, if you haven't seen the Washington Post piece that came out, I think Ryan Kilgore wrote it in the Sunday paper. I want to read it just a couple of little bits from this because I think it's really eye-opening. Because I know some people have pointed to some other sports leagues over in like South Korea or China or Japan that they were getting back underway, and there's been some stalling in that regard. Mm-hmm. But
whoopsie daisy,
yeah, a little bit of whoopsie daisy there. And Dr. Fauci was asked about baseball games and concerts starting up again this summer, and he wouldn't give a direct answer. He said the only way to stop the virus is a vaccine. And I really think that probably, or you just, you figure out who's had it, who hasn't had it, who has the antibodies. That's a good way for people maybe to start getting back to work. Like, if you've been exposed and you have the antibodies to it, then you can probably go back to work. But that doesn't mean you can't test 40,000 people and have 40,000 people with antibodies in the stands. So, I mean, there are limits to what you can do when you're talking about a gathering of 30 to 40,000 people together at one point until everybody's got the vaccine. I don't see how you can have crowds. And so then you're talking about, okay, can you have sporting events with nobody in the stands? Yes, you can. But here are some things to think about. And this is from the Washington Post piece. In China, as the coronavirus cases started to drop and everyday life appeared to stabilize, this is from the Washington Post piece, the Chinese Basketball Association targeted an April 15th return. But government restrictions pushed the date back to early May, and this week, as cases started to rise again, the league announced an indefinite pause. In Japan, the Nippon Professional Baseball League is also kind of serving as a cautionary tale for baseball. With the number of new cases on the way down, NPB officials began preparing for a delayed start to the 2020 season, pushing its scheduled opening day from March 20th to April 24th, and teams began playing exhibition games in empty stadiums. However, on March 26th, three members of the Hanshin Tigers tested positive for the coronavirus, according to the AP. So the team responded by canceling its scheduled exhibition games, ordering players and staff to self-quarantine for 14 days, and disinfecting its home stadium. The NPB still planned to open the regular season on April 24th, but now, as Japan's coronavirus outbreak worsens, that became untenable, and on Friday, league officials announced an indefinite extension to its delayed start. So here in China and in Japan, you have a couple of sports leagues trying to get underway when they saw the cases starting to go down. Inevitably, this doesn't necessarily, you know, we've been talking about this curve that once it starts to go down, it's just going to keep going down, down, down until it levels out, until it goes away. That may not happen, as we've heard people say. And so I just don't see how you can have a baseball season before a vaccine is done. And if you're going to have a baseball season, the number of cases is going to have to be down so much, or so many people are going to have gotten it and gotten over it, that you can have 30 baseball teams full of 26 players. And by the way, if you're playing a Major League Baseball season, you're going to have expanded rosters, and you're going to need minor leaguers in case people get hurt. So are you going to start the minor leagues back up again and get all those guys going again? I don't see how you can have a Major League Baseball season without then also kicking off the minor league season, so that if Jake Arrieta has an arm issue at some point this year, I know it could never happen, you need somebody from AAA to replace him. And I just don't see how that's possible given this current situation.
There's no idea that doesn't put people at risk, which is entirely the point that you say, we can't do this until there's a vaccine. You can't do this until that risk is mitigated in some way. I also kind of think it's funny that Anthony Fauci is answering questions about baseball and concerts. This 79-year-old man who's neck deep in the coronavirus, who had to get tested himself because of being on the front lines, and yeah, like he's getting asked about when baseball's going to start. Like he's going to be able to weigh. If I'm him, all I'm doing is just again, people, do not gather in large groups. I don't know what to tell you at this point. Like this it's baseball. It's just the least of my concerns right now. Obviously, we're a baseball podcast. We have different priorities.
Well, that's true. I mean, we have it. This is a podcast about baseball, and we want to get baseball back up and running again too. And Liz, I guess, you know, when we're talking about getting professional sports going again, when we're talking about baseball, it's a lot harder than, say, lifting the restrictions in our communities. You know what I mean? Like it's a lot different than you know, having gatherings of 10 or 15 people again in your community. About maybe offices opening back up again, offices of, you know, 20 people or less, 30 people or less. My guess is that we see that before we see stadiums full of people again, or we even see professional sports beginning play on the field again, even without fans in the stands, for the reasons I just mentioned and you mentioned, all of the number of people, the sheer number of people that are going to need to kind of get back to work in order to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I keep getting worried about is that eventually I think people assume that enough people are going to have gotten it that we can all go back to our lives again. And you don't know if you can get this a second time. Like, they're still discovering that. And so this is just, it's just so hard to accept that this is going to be reality for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really hard to accept, but it is. And like, what everyone needs to do now is, like, if a vaccine's the only way to do this, then everyone should be pouring money into the scientific community to figure it out, because we're going to need to vaccinate 6 billion people.
Is that hard? Should we?
I think it seems like it's hard, but like literally everyone on the planet will need to be vaccinated. It will need to be the largest, you know, the largest global aid project of all time to get everyone vaccinated. And I, of course, have no faith that everyone is, you know, everyone could possibly be. But that's what's going to need to happen. So everyone get on it. I'm tired of being indoors, as are all of you.
Yeah.
I mean, miss people.
Yeah. I mean, they say early 2021 for the vaccine. I think it's going to happen before then, but nobody knows. Nobody. And that was the other thing about this Washington Post article, to all the different people that they talked to. One guy said, it's not even that my crystal ball is cloudy. It's black. Like, no one knows. No one knows anything about this. So the only reason why I wanted to bring this up for folks is because obviously it's in the news when, you know, these professional sports executives are talking to the president, and Ken Rosenthal is reporting on what Major League Baseball is planning right now as far as a July 1st start time. You've got just, I'm warning everyone to just kind of take it with a grain of salt and get used to the idea that we spend this summer just boning up on our Phillies history and watching a lot of old videos and talking about a lot of the great players, because it feels to me we are going to be extremely lucky to get a 2020 baseball season here this year. And you know what? If that happens, okay. You know, that's awful. It really stinks. But you know, we just, you know, trying to find a way through it and just wrap our minds around to get mentally prepared for it now would be good. And if we get a season, then it's a great gift. It's a great surprise, no matter what shape it comes in. Even if it is teams playing in spring training sites with no fans and maybe two camera angles for the entire game, you know, we'll take anything stripped down. You know, I guess I was thinking about it. It's like, what if they only have, you know, August and September? Is it, you know, was it worth starting up a baseball season? I would be interested even in something like a special tournament. Like, you make this 2020 season a really weird one-off kind of thing. Like, maybe you don't have a World Series. Maybe you have, like, a World Baseball Classic-type playoff with all 30 teams. And you play something down that way. I think everybody would be up for something like that. I think everybody's ready to throw the kitchen sink at this season and say, let's get weird, whatever it is, whatever it happens to be, whatever they need to do to get a season going on the field. Justin, I think everybody would be up for whatever they're able to come up with and make work safely.
Yeah, what did Justin Turner say? If they play games at all and you wind up with a tie, instead of going into extra innings, just have a mini home run derby to determine
the
winner. Just stuff
for
like
this
that.
Year? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? This is kind of Rob Manfred's wheelhouse. He's been throwing weird crap out there for the past couple of years in a, you know, misguided attempt to fix problems that aren't there or distract people from the real problems that are there. This is kind of where he should shine, you know? I'm honestly a little disappointed that all we've got so far is just a reversal of the don't, you know, we're not going to have games until we can gather in large groups again. I feel like he's been throwing weird stuff out there for so long. He's got to have an idea notebook full of what I would do if they told me I could break baseball. it's probably a lot of fun. I mean, what was it? Last year we were talking about all the things they were experimenting with in the Atlantic League, and you know, they could just throw it all at baseball. You know, if they play any baseball this year, they could be like, all right, we're changing the distance from the mound to the plate between innings. What the hell else were they trying to do down there? Like, the ball is now going to be like, it's completely hollowed out, or it's going to have like a bunch of bees inside it. And if you break the ball open and the bees get out, then, you know, you have to fight the bees until, you know, the stadium has to, you know, you have to stay on the field until the bees are gone. I don't know. It just seems like this is the kind of thing he's been trying to do for years and years, and we were all just like rolling our eyes at Rob Manfred as he tries to combat pace of play or throws a batter minimum for pitchers out there. It's like, go crazy, man. Like, open the book that's labeled weird stuff and let us know what's inside. At least for the sake of commentating on it, you know, all the stuff that could never happen. It's more real than ever. This is your year, man. Like, this horrible global pandemic that has already claimed so many lives is a gift for a mad scientist trying to take a giant billion-dollar sports league and turn it into something that just looks different for the hell of it. This is it, man. Like, just go nuts. But that's, again, if they play any baseball at all. I think it would be awesome to have some kind of like tournament the way you're describing it, just some sort of double elimination tournament for these guys who are used to playing 162 games a year, showing up on a weekend like it's your like dad's softball league for guys 50 and over,
right?
And like, they're all kind of in shape, you know, they've been riding their Pelotons, but they're eating like hot dogs in the dugout and stuff. And you know, at least this is already going to be a season we talk about forever, so why not make, you know, give it some silver lining that we also talk about it, because that was that year they had that weird tournament with all the bees instead in September. So yeah, why not go nuts? I mean, at this point you don't feel normal getting out of bed in the morning, you know, and eventually it'll feel sort of normal to be this way. In a lot of ways it kind of already does, which is even more demoralizing. But if you can use this bizarre situation to just experiment with baseball or have fun with baseball or just do something that doesn't need any continuation or expansion. It's just something we did once, had a laugh, and moved on. I think that'd be great.
What do you think, Liz? I mean, is this the right season, the right place, if and when we get things started, to just go completely cuckoo nuts?
I'd love to see it. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, I just, people want to see any baseball at all. And if there isn't enough left for it to be meaningful, then you might as well make it fun, especially if it's going to be in empty stadiums. You know, if we're all just going to be watching on television, I mean, God, if baseball wanted to get its ratings back up, this is the way to have done it.
Yeah.
Everyone's been lamenting the slide in ratings for sports on television for a while. And this is certainly going to fix that, because as soon as there's anything to watch on television, everyone will watch it.
Yep. It will absolutely
be. I mean, I'm so curious as to what they'll do to start, because I feel the instinct will be to bring out the biggest flag possible. Like, literally the largest flag anyone has ever seen, from that woman that was profiled in Sports Illustrated who makes the big flags, who's currently not
making
any.
Every day we don't have baseball, that flag gets a little bigger. Every day.
Exactly. Soon it will cover the entire stadium, wherever it is that they start. But, like, the instinct will be to, like, this is America getting back to normal. You know, we are all heroes for being here. We have made it through to the point where we could at least have sports. But there'll be no one in the stadium. And no one will be really anywhere still be able to do anything beyond still broadcasting from their, you know, beyond the guys in the stadium. The guys, everyone else will still be in their living rooms and their offices.
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to jump into a Phillies.com tournament that they did, where they were trying to run down the best Phillies moment of the last 20 years, looking at non-clinching scenarios. I thought their final two, as voted on by the fans, was interesting, because there were the other moments that they had up there as well. You could make an argument for them to be in the final matchup as well. And we'll let you know who won and who we think should have won. We'll do that next on Hittin' Season. And we are back on Hittin' Season, so as we don't have any baseball to talk about right now, we'll talk about baseball that has already been played. And as part of that, Phillies.com, the Phillies Twitter handle, was running a poll tournament on Twitter, looking at the best trying to find out what was the best moment of the last 20 years, non-clinching, which means not Brad Lidge striking out Eric Hinsky's, none of the NLCS clinchers or anything like that. What they came down to was the final two moments were Chase Utley's deke in Game 5 of the 2008 World Series, where he pretended to throw to first base and then threw home to get Jason Bartlett, versus Doc's postseason no-hitter. Those were the two finalists, and I don't know if either of you guys saw who won, Justin or Liz. Liz, did you see which one happened to win?
I didn't.
Justin, did you see which one happened to win?
No, still on the edge of my seat.
Which one? Well, let me ask you, which one do you think won?
I would guess the no-hitter because of the... Yeah. I was looking at that, and I think I wound up voting for Jimmy's because I felt like that had less of a chance of winning. Mm-hmm. I figured, you know, Roy... that's history. It's the postseason. It's about as close to a clinching moment as you can get without it being a clinching moment. And it was, you know, winning the game is, you know, they clinched the game, not the series.
Yeah.
So I felt like that was probably a more historic moment, I think, for a lot of people that was going to get a lot of the support.
Liz, you feel the same way?
I do. I didn't vote. I didn't even know. I think I did kind of know this was happening, but I didn't vote for anything. But I would agree that, you know, I think it is sort of cheating for the postseason no-hitter to be in there because it isn't a clincher, but it's, like, hugely historic. But I am kind of surprised that Utley's deke made it that far.
Yeah.
Like, made it to the finals because that's a moment that I love, you know? It's this great moment of just, like, supreme intelligence and, like, baseball instincts.
Yep.
Like, when do you see someone be that smart on the field in real time?
Yeah, no, it was an amazing play that Utley made there, and it was a game-saving play in the clinching game, so I can understand why it made the finals. You're both right, Halliday's NLDS no-hitter did win the final matchup 63% to 37%, so it was a pretty solid win there for Halliday's NLDS no-hitter. They had 14,500 votes on the Phillies' Twitter handle. For that. So, I mean, listen, that's what I would have voted for, too. Just because it was such a historic moment. There have only been two no-hitters ever thrown in the postseason, and I still can't get past the fact that one of them was thrown by a Philly in Philadelphia. I mean, Don Larsen's perfect game was the only one for years and years and years and years until Roy Halladay comes along in a Phillies uniform in his first ever playoff game and throws a postseason no-hitter. To me, I do think that's the best non-clinching moment of the last 20 years. I think it's a pretty easy call myself, but I am surprised Utley's Deke made it to the finals, and I don't know exactly what it went up against. I'll have to go back and take a look and see if I can find. But the other moments that were a part of this tournament were Jimmy Rollins' walk-off in 2009. I think you mentioned that one, Justin. Joe Blanton's World Series home run in 2008. The Matt Stairs home run. I'm actually kind of surprised. I have to figure out where that got knocked out, what knocked out the Matt Stairs home run, but I'm surprised that didn't make the final two. The Brett Myers walk Victorino Grand Slam in Game 2 of the NLDS against the Brewers in 08. One moment that doesn't ever get talked about as a great moment is the Carlos Ruiz dribbler up the third baseline in Game 3 of the World Series that won it for the Phillies that night. Huge hit. I mean, a huge hit in a huge game, even though I think it was, maybe we don't think about it much because it was kind of a lucky hit. I mean, he didn't get much of it, but it was just enough to allow Bruntlett to score. And then the Halladay perfect game against the Miami Marlins in the regular season in 2010 was the other one. So I guess if I was going to put any one of those other ones, it's really tough, man. I always go back and forth as far as a bigger moment, Jimmy Rollins walk-off or the Matt Stairs home run. Those two are so even to me because they were both holy crap moments in the same exact situation, the same exact scenario. Game 4 of the National League Championship Series with the Phillies leading 2-1. Both blows basically won the game for the Phillies each time. They were both equally consequential. The Matt Stairs home run, I'll never forget that hit. But the Rollins hit was also so memorable. Can you guys parse those two out? Which one do you think was the bigger moment in between those two particular hits?
It's between Jimmy's walk-off in 2009
and Matt Stairs' home run in 2008.
All right, so if we're limiting it to those two, I was actually, not to derail the debate, but I my focus kind of drifted to the Myers walk Victorino slam option that they had for a while, partially because in watching a video clip montage of the 100 greatest Philly sports moments since 2008, they had these moments in there too, but we're talking about cheating, you know, some of these moments cheating. That's two different moments, and this montage counted them as one each, which I think is totally fair. Obviously they feed into each other, but I you know, Liz and I talked about this season a lot two years ago when we were doing the 10-year anniversary of the 2008 team, and obviously they were going to draw a lot from that team to come up with a tournament like this. But I believe it was the Victorino slam moment that I felt like this was, you know, they were going to win. Like there was all that dread, and John, you and I have talked about all the time about how surreal it was to see postseason decorations going up at the Phillies stadium after growing up and seeing, you know, just seeing it appear. That's something other teams do. That's not something the Phillies do. So you're kind of filled with that doubt, with that dread all throughout, even after they've made the postseason, and especially after 2007, when it was like, yeah, they pushed and pushed and pushed and they made the postseason and then they're gone. But in 2008, it was like, it was different. It was felt, if you needed something to feel like it was different. And Victorino hitting a grand slam was like about as different as you could get. Not that he was, you know, incapable of that, but you expect that moment to be a Ryan Howard moment. You expect that to be a Chase Utley moment. But that was Victorino following a crazy at bat by Brett Myers.
And it was just against CC Sabathia, who had been unconscious up to that point. Yeah,
who had been acquired, and I'm remembering now as these thoughts flood back into my head that I definitely wrote about this moment in great detail at one point because he had been acquired for that moment. He had been acquired by the Brewers for half of a season. Everybody knew he wasn't going to be on the team again that year, so they got him for a couple of weeks down the stretch to get through that moment, to not walk the pitcher, and to get out of that inning without any runs scoring. And the Phillies ruined that. And you know, they put 4 runs on the board early in a playoff series, and it was just like, wow, this team can win. Like, that's something you've seen happen to the Phillies so many times, but now the Phillies were doing it to somebody else. And that series, that whole postseason run was filled with moments like that. But that one, I, for some reason, that sticks out in my head as the first one, the first time during that postseason run that I was like, oh my God, okay, I think this team can actually do that. Like, they didn't stop being good when the postseason started, which happens sometimes. Now, like, in regards to the two we're talking about, Rollins walk off in 2009, and I already forgot. Did you see the Stairs home run? Is that what we said?
Yeah, the okay. Stairs and the Sorry. Stairs and Rollins hits. But no, I think that was good though, because I didn't really. That was a great moment, obviously, but I don't have that as one of my top moments. And that moment lost out to Matt Stairs rips one into the night. That
yeah.
was the,
and that, so that's they, the yeah. same impact. I feel like, you know, yeah. I remember well, watching that moment with the girl I was dating at the time, and yeah, you know what? Let's just go to Liz. Cut this part out. That story is not podcast appropriate. I just realized.
So I'm Liz, still trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, the Stairs home run has that significance. Like, that was when I realized, oh, they're definitely doing this, yeah. because I still expected the Dodgers to beat them even after they made it past the Brewers. So for me, the Stairs home run is the, oh man, they're actually going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Victorino home run gets lost in the shuffle too, mm-hmm. because that was just as big a holy crap moment. He hit that ball. It looked like it was just going to be in the corner. I still don't know how that ball went over the fence.
Are you talking about the grand slam or the home run he hit?
No,
before
no, I'm
Matt
sorry.
Stairs
the home run he hit before Matt Stairs' home run.
Yeah.
The one that tied the game. Because it didn't look like he got nearly enough of that for it to go out of the park. I still think it went through the fence somehow. Because I don't know. It didn't have the elevation to get over the fence. I don't know how it happened. But it's funny. That's not even among this list because the Matt Stairs home run was so shocking. He came off the bench. He didn't really get much of an opportunity in that postseason. But the fact that he also just destroyed the baseball. And I think a lot of people complain about Joe Buck. Joe Buck's call of that home run was amazing. Like, the Matt Stairs hits one into the night, deep into right, way out of here, is such a phenomenal call. Like, that's the call we gravitate to on that Matt Stairs home run. I know Scott Fransky had a version of it. I can't remember ever having heard the Scott Fransky version more than once or twice. It's the Joe Buck call of that moment that we really remember, and that helps to elevate a big moment like that. So it was interesting. The Matt Stairs home run beat the Brett Myers, Shane Victorino slam, but then the Matt Stairs home run lost to the Chase Utley fake throw. I probably still would have gone with Matt Stairs over the Utley Deke.
I think I would too. I mean, you want to talk about guys being acquired for specific moments, even more so than Sabathia was Matt Stairs grabbed by Pat Gillick for that exact moment to do exactly what he did in that moment. And it was so casual. You know, Victorino, yeah, like you said, it feels like it took every muscle in his tiny little body to get that ball over the fence. You looked away for a second in celebrating that game-tying home run, and suddenly Matt Stairs had put him ahead by two runs. And I think you're right about Joe Buck. That whole series is full of pretty good calls from Joe Buck, and I actually like Joe Buck as an announcer.
I like Joe Buck now, too.
He was at
yeah.
his peak at that point. It yeah. was kind of before everyone turned on him, and then everyone is sort of starting to come back around A-Rod style.
You want a villain as far as national broadcasters go? Turn to Dick Stockton, who has made some of the most lifeless calls on Phillies home runs in the postseason.
He used to be great, but
yeah,
now he's not good anymore.
His call of Howard's home run in game one of the NLDS in 2011, he seemed confused, like he couldn't see what was going on. But I just rewatched Ben Francisco's home run in that series that gave him the lead in that game. I don't think I think he might have been like facing the wrong direction. I don't know what the hell was going on. It was strange. He's like, and it's a home run.
That
like,
means
wow,
he goes all the way around the bases, and the people in front of him score two.
Thanks,
so that
Nick.
Makes three runs.
Looks like this runner's not stopping at any of the bases. We're going to find out what's going on down there and get back to you folks real soon. Yeah, so I'm definitely with you on the Joe Buck call. Yeah, but Deke is kind of it sort of transcends truth. I almost want to say it's like a myth at this. It's like folklore. It's like a Phillies ghost story you tell around the fire. I know, but it's because
but it actually happened. Like, it can't be those things.
There were other home runs in the series, but how often was like a deke something that happens in this series in baseball? I think it kind of it distinguishes itself because of that. So I get why people turn to that, and it was played up, I think, in one of the Major League Baseball produced retrospective. So I think they played it up a lot there, so people remember it, and all these writers were like, oh yeah, if that doesn't happen, the Phillies might not win the World Series that year. You could probably say that about just about every play that happened in that game, but you know, it's great dramatic. It's a great example of what kind of player Utley was. So I definitely get the appeal, but I'm with you. I probably would have gone with Matt Stairs' giant home run over that.
I probably would have too, just because of the significance. Like, I love the Utley deke. I'm a huge, huge proponent of the deke, but it's a home run. That's what a big moment's supposed to be. Yeah. Like, the deke was awesome in retrospect, but it's not something that everyone's going to stand up and, like, lose their hats over.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only defensive play in this tournament. I mean, there's a couple pitching performances.
I was going to ask that, actually.
Yeah, it's the only defensive play on this thing. You could argue that the best play that he made in the postseason was in the Matt Stairs game, when the Dodgers, I think, had gone ahead 5-3, and they had the bases loaded and one out, and Russell Martin rips a ball right up the middle. Utley dives to his right to make the catch, and then scrambles over and tags second base with his glove to get a double play and get the Phillies out of the inning. That was as good a play as the deke. You know what I mean? Now, that play was just strictly more reaction and instinct, as opposed to the deke, which was more kind of a thinking man's play. But both were great moments. I love the fake. I love the fake throw. I thought the Jimmy Rollins walk off got a really bad placement in this tournament. They put the Jimmy Rollins walk off up against the Halladay no hitter in the playoffs.
Oh, come on!
Like, how can you do what they should have done? Is they should have matched up the Rollins walk off against the Stairs walk off, or at the very least, put it down. You know, they should have had the Jimmy Rollins walk off up against the Carlos Ruiz hit. They had Ruiz up against the Halladay regular season perfect game, and they had the Halladay playoff no-hitter against Rollins walk-off. That's like 2-1 seeds going at it. I mean, you can't put the Rollins walk-off there. That should have gone up against Utley fake throw. If you put Rollins walk-off up against the Utley fake throw in the first round, I think the Rollins walk-off beats Utley's fake throw.
Yeah, I think so too. That was an incredible. That walk off was nuts. I mean, that was the game ESPN had posted that the Dodgers had won, because Manny Ramirez had made a shoestring catch, and they were playing that up as the pivotal moment in the game, and they had it up. People were screen capping it because they thought the game was over, and I mean, you know, it was down to his last strike. I mean, that's why that hit was incredible. I remember I was there at the stadium for that, and it was like, whew, boy, yeah, that's up there for me personally. So I think you're right.
Well, and that's one of those, I can hear Scott Fransky's call in my head right now.
Yeah.
Like that
great
is
call.
That is an all-timer as far as like excited broadcasters broadcasting excitedly. You know, it's the best. That is such an awesome moment. And I think it actually ends up getting the short shrift somewhat because the 09 season ended painfully. Mm-hmm. Which is disappointing because there were a lot of good moments. I mean, when we went through the 09 season, I remember thinking, like, I can't believe they made it as far as they did. Like, Cole Hamels was a shell of himself.
Yeah, didn't get Cliff Lidl halfway through the season.
Halfway through! Mm-hmm. I know. Like, it's a miracle they made it as far as they did.
They had no closer. Brad Lidge could not close games out. I mean, Hamels and Lidge were probably the two biggest reasons they won it in 08, and they were the two biggest reasons why they probably didn't win it in 09.
You know, this was also, speaking of broadcasters being excited, not only Fransky's call is great there, L.A. is like just actively cheering behind him.
Yeah!
But then they have that video clip that NBC Sports Philly put out of Michael Barkan, Ricky Pitalico, and Darren Dalton watching it and reacting. Like, that was,
the best.
That just seems foreign at this point, watching them be so excited about
it.
Well, what the great thing about that moment was, and Dalton's reaction to that, as soon as the bat, as soon as the ball left Rollins' bat, Dalton sits there and goes, got him. You know, he's just totally chill about it.
He knew
but
it.
It was when my microphone cord fell out there. Can you guys still hear me okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. The moment that happened, that was when I really felt like the Phillies were invincible. Like there was a time in 2009 where I wish the Phillies were just invincible, and I didn't think there was any way they could ever lose a game again. So, I mean, that was a surreal feeling for a little while, like that your baseball team can't lose. There's nothing they're going to win it all again. I was honestly shocked when they lost to the Yankees, especially after that game one Cliff Lee win.
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I was sure they were winning back-to-back world championships.
Yep.
I was sure of it.
I was totally convinced after that game one. I was watching that at a friend's house. I kept waiting for somebody to break Cliff Lee's momentum, somebody to just hit a home run or just, you know, do something devastating. And it just never happened. And I was like, wow, okay. I don't see why you would think that the Phillies would lose this World Series. Like, this is incredible. My confidence was all-time high.
Yeah. Well, it was a great run. And that was a fun thing the Phillies did. I would have structured it a little bit differently. But I think at the end of the day, they probably got the right winner, the Roy Halladay no-hitter in Game 1 of the NLDS against the Cincinnati Reds as the best non-clinching moment of the last 20 years. Fun thing for us to be doing here as we're waiting for real Phillies baseball to kind of bring us back if and when it happens here in 2020. We're all hoping we see Phillies baseball this year. We're all hoping we see baseball in some kind of way, and we'll just kind of trying to keep you up to date on everything that's going on here over these next few weeks and months as we hear it, and give you our thoughts on how realistic maybe some of the talk is that you're hearing come from Major League Baseball. But before we wrap up, Justin, any final thoughts?
I have a couple. Just one final note on Matt Stairs, by the way, because I was curious. In a 19-season career in which he appeared in the postseason for 17 postseason games, he has only one postseason home run, which is only surprising because he exists for the sole purpose and is likely on a postseason roster for the sole purpose of hitting home runs. And
right.
that was the only one. That was the wow. You know, it was a big one, but that's the only one in his entire career. The other thing is I have an ongoing series of Baseball Prospectus right now on baseball rivalries that are no more, and just focusing on three more of the more interesting moments that serve as pillars for those rivalries. And I did the Phillies and Pirates in the first one. Last week was the Dodgers and Reds. And this week we're looking at the Blue Jays and Expos, which has been even more interesting because that rivalry was more about what happened off the field than what was happening on it between the two of them. So that's been a lot of fun. It's interesting. I'm finding out a lot of stuff that I didn't know about these two teams and about the markets they played in and just Canadian baseball in general. So that's been a lot of fun, and that'll be up this week.
All right, make sure you check that out and follow Justin on Twitter, Justin_Clues, so that you know when it's come out. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
No, I have to go back to work tomorrow, so I'm just preparing myself for another week without sports and writing about how there are no sports. Cool. I wish I could be a little bit happier tonight, folks. I'm sorry.
That sounds like a tough needle to thread, if you ask me, but well, make sure you're following Liz at Liz Rocher to catch up.
I'm a bundle full of sunshine these days, guys. I really am.
We are all trying to deal with this in the best way we can. And so hopefully we are helping you get through your Monday or Tuesday or whenever you're listening to this podcast. Just getting a little bit of a baseball fix for you. And we'll have more hitting seasons coming this week. I am very hopeful about a big guest coming up this week. Hoping that this can happen at some point in the next week or two. I don't want to give away the store just yet, but crossing my fingers, we can make something special happen. In the meantime, I've got a bunch of good authors lined up who are going to be coming on the podcast. We have Eric Longenhagen's got a book out. Keith Law's got a book out. D.B. Firstman's got a book out. A couple others have some books. We're going to probably get Todd Zalecki on the show. We're going to get a couple other people on the show. All have some good stuff out. If you didn't check out the interview I did with Brad Baluchian, author of The Wax Pack, in episode 370 of Hittin' Season, make sure you check that out and get his book. It's really, really cool. Just a really cool idea for a book. So make sure you check that out as well. And don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. We got lots of great stuff up there. Justin's got a cool video from what would have been Philly's opening day against the Brewers. I've got a Cards on the Table video up there. We've got Absolutely Hammered up there. We've got all kinds of great stuff going on at the Patreon. Make sure you go to patreon.com/hittin'season to take advantage of all of that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.